Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.
Parenting on Moncrief. Thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
And you're listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 1890 453 106 is our local number. Our text number is 53106. That will cost you 30 cent. Or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. It is time for our parenting slot. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Here's your first question. My daughter, 4, was rubbing and putting her fingers in her private parts the other day. And to us, it all looked like she may have been pleasuring herself, let's say. Me and my wife are going out of our minds because it seems impossible that she would do this to herself. We're asking, could she have been exposed to pornography somehow, or is this actually abnormal behaviour for a 4-year-old?
Yeah, it's not abnormal at all. In fact, it's very normal, and occasional body exploration for the purpose of pleasure is actually very normal behaviour in this age group. And honestly, most children between the ages of 2 and 6 years old do it. Now, it tends to be occasional, not pervasive, not constant. And often they discover that it's a fun, pleasurable thing to do while doing a very natural exploration of their body.
Yeah.
And then they repeat it because it feels nice. And they don't see any issue with it, and there shouldn't be. So I suppose for the parents in this, I would be saying, do not panic. Do not let your mind go to all kinds of worrying places, and do your best not to shame her or engage in the stop it, don't do that, that's dirty.
Yeah.
Don't try to avoid all of that language. By all means, and at 4 years old, you certainly can do this with her, boundary it and let her know it is quite okay to touch herself like that in private, but she must wash her hands before and after. You just put a boundary on it that she can't do it in public places, she can't do it in school. It's something you do in private, and you wash your hands before and after. And you just repeat that as the boundary. And otherwise, don't spotlight it at all. It's something that maybe she's just discovered, and it's a bit of a phase, and then it'll be less interesting, and then at a later stage in her life, it'll become more interesting again, developmentally.
Yes.
Very normal.
Yeah.
But unless she is doing it in a very excessive way, or she's being very physically rough with herself and there's a risk that she's going to hurt herself or damage her urinary tract or something like that, I would largely let this go. I'd certainly not let it become a power struggle where you're saying no and she's going, but I can, and you can't stop me. I wouldn't do that. And if anything, definitely use distraction over discipline. If you see it happening, just redirect her attention and focus to something else and distract her. And then if you think she's doing it because she's anxious or stressed and she's using it as a stress relief, explore alternate ways of doing that with her, different kind of sensory play, tactile, texture-based interactions that you can do with her.
Yeah.
But largely what I'm saying, if you don't have a cause for a worry here, there hasn't been an explicit trauma, nothing has happened, this is not a traumatic symptom. This is normal developmental behaviour.
And I think I remember reading that even when, as soon as they can sit up, that babies, little girls will rock back
absolutely.
And forth a bit because it feels nice.
Or straddle toys or things like that. This is, like, it's really normal. And children are very curious beings. It's actually part of their development to be curious.
Yeah.
To seek out, oh, what's this and what's that? And, you know, I mean, any child who discovers they have a nose with two holes in it, for example, will go picking their nose as an exploration. So this is just a body exploration.
Yeah. My daughter is 18 months old and is finding her words. The word that has really stuck is dirty. Everything is dirty. She hates touching anything. She'll run away from her toys, people, food, the dog, all because they're dirty. It's actually starting to impact her routine and her eating habits. I'm finding it quite difficult. How do I make her embrace the dirt?
Yeah, it's just something she's latched on to, you know, and definitely I get, you know, you don't want it to become something that she associates in an avoidant way. So you want to rename when she's calling these things, you know, toys, people, food, the dog, dirty. You want to rename them as yay, fun, and use that kind of prosody and musicality of voice and tone to convey the meaning. Because at 18 months, it's not so much what you say, but how you say it that helps her integrate the meaning of it. So I would use that to convey meaning and just reframe limit for her, that this is something super fun. Let her see you really engaging with the dog or the food or the whatever it is that's going on. I would also, just because you're saying it's interfering with her eating habits as well, I'd encourage her to touch food, feed herself, do a little bit of finger feeding with her, making a number of foods available on a little tray that she can mush, maybe eat some of. It'll go everywhere and anywhere. But I suppose with this kind of stuff, what you don't, as a parent, you want to avoid rushing in with the wipes and the tissues. If her mouth or hands are dirty, let them be dirty and messy for a period of time without you rushing in to always wipe and clean them, because we can do that almost unconsciously with our kids, that we see them get, and then we're reinforcing a tactile aversion by constantly cleaning them. So I would let her explore food and mess. Try and increase the messy sensory play, both indoors and outdoors. And what I mean by that is, you know, getting a little sensory basin, that, you know, the basin with warm water, a little squirt of washing up liquid, a little teaspoon of cinnamon or ginger, something strong smelling, and let her mix it up with her fingers and dip her toys that can be washed in and out of it, and just play with that. In addition, you know, you could also make some Play-Doh with her so that she's part of the making of it, and let her play with that. And lots of outdoor play that includes puddle jumping and playing with sticks and mud, and just getting really messy and staying messy, but then beginning to associate that mess with fun rather than something that needs to be cleaned.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone loves jumping in muddy puddles.
Everyone.
She must be aware of that. Somebody texts in to say, my son loves to walk around the house and show us the dirty areas. I've turned it into a game. Everything he points out as dirty, we play the cleaning game. Saves me cleaning and makes him happy. Crikey.
By handing him a dustpan and brush and saying, there you go,
clean
go wild.
Yeah, Kate says you can get that kinetic sand that is like sand but doesn't stick to you, so it's not dirty as such. Could be a happy medium to start embracing the dirt, says Kate. That's not a bad idea. I'm hoping you can give me advice in relation to my 5-year-old daughter. She's a great kid and is confident, outgoing, and started school in September, which she loves. The problem is, in the past year, I've noticed that she has developed such a cheeky attitude towards me, her mum especially, but it can be towards other people too. Last week, a neighbour called in and my daughter told her she was interrupting her evening and that she didn't like her. I was mortified. She regularly tells me she hates me. I'm the worst mother ever, and I wish God would give me a new mammy. This is generally said when she doesn't get her own way. Generally, I correct her and tell her it's not nice to talk like that, etc. But she takes no notice. My brother has a child the same age and has regularly pointed out to me how good his child is and how he's not a bit cheeky. Wonder who points that out. I don't know how to stop this behaviour, and I'm finding it very embarrassing too, especially when she speaks to me like that in front of other people. What can I do to stop the cheek, or is it all a phase I'm better off ignoring?
Oh, I mean, look, it might well be a phase, but I certainly wouldn't ignore it. I think when children do elicit what's often described as, you know, attention-seeking behaviour, we need to look at that more as a need for connection rather than attention. Mm. I suppose I'm really interested in the neighbour calling around in the evening and your daughter saying, you know, you're interrupting my evening, I don't like you. And I'm, again, not excusing that, because that is something you have to deal with, and that is embarrassing for you as a parent. But I'm wondering, was the neighbour interrupting her evening? Was this her time with you at the end of a busy day?
Yeah, it could have been.
And she didn't want to share you. And again, that's to explain rather than excuse. But I think if we can reframe for her, it must have been really hard for you that you didn't get all that time with me. So let's make a plan that we're going to do something together this weekend to make up for that. So she knows if you have unexpected visitors, she will be compensated with that time for you. Because children really talk about how their time in the evenings before bedtime with their parents are their favourite time of the day. So again, that might be just something that will give you an empathic hook of reflecting back to her. The other thing that I'm struck at here is, you know, does she understand other perspectives? Around the age of 3.5, 4, children go into a stage of play, projective play, where, you know, we've mentioned it before, the two little toys talk to each other and they have to do the two voices and ergo consider two different opposing points of view and perspectives at once. And that helps them develop a capacity for empathy and critical thinking and self and other awareness. And I'm wondering if you're thinking now, listening to that, has your daughter done a lot of that kind of play, that small world miniatures talking to each other play? If not, I think you've got to increase increase some of that for her and use it in a reflective way, so that you could take the incident of the neighbour calling around and say to her, you know, I'm wondering how you would feel if you called in to say hello to somebody and they told you you weren't welcome. Mm. How might that feel for you? Or I wonder if you had a friend over for a play date and I came in and said, you're interrupting my afternoon. I don't like you being here. You've got to go home. How would your friend feel about that? And then how would you feel that your friend was made to, you know, do a lot of that wondering and other perspective taking to help her go, oh, I get what you're saying. She may need a little help with that. Mm. And wondering is often a great parenting tool, because you're not telling and you're not asking a yes and no thing. You're wondering, mm. which means that you get a little bit of understanding. But I would directly tell her that it's not okay to behave like that, to speak to grown-ups or other people like that, be it you or somebody else, and explain why it's not okay and that it hurts your feelings, it makes you embarrassed and you don't feel good about it. And then, you know, you want to give her do-overs. So you've explained it to her. And if it happens again, you simply say to her with a prompt, I think you forgot how we speak to other people in this family. Do you want to try that again? And if she persists with the cheeky behavior, she's kind of calling your bluff at the age of five, yeah. and going, I do remember, you've given me a reminder and I'm still going to do it. So you want to have a consequence ready, but keep consequences logical and creative and keep them about time and privilege. Okay, you don't get this privilege. We don't get to bake together. Oh, you lose 10 minutes now. You go to bed 10 minutes earlier, whatever it is. Don't make it a stuff or a thing,
yeah.
an object, because kids could care less about that stuff. They do care about time and privilege and time with you. So lead by positive example. Make sure she hears you being very polite and considerate in how you talk about other things. And ignore any minor transgressions. Save the big reactions for the big stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. And I think, you know, you've got to do it that way and lead and prompt, give her a prompt for any positive social behavior before events. We're going to be somewhere, so-and-so, your cousin, your uncles, your aunties will be there. This is how the day is going to go. And this is what I expect from you.
Mm.
So you want to talk her through it until she does get it and ignore the comparisons. Don't entertain comparisons between two children. No two five-year-olds are the same, you know, and I'm yeah. quite sure the other child has their isms as well. Don't yeah. you worry.
Though Padder thinks the five-year-old is great. Fair play to that child for being honest. Many an adult grins and bears a social interaction that is inconvenient. We can learn a thing or two from that child. Yes.
The honesty of children is one way yeah. of looking at it, for sure.
I'm just being honest. Yeah. Get out. My 14-year-old son got a computer for his birthday last week and says he wants us to install it in his bedroom with internet access. I don't think it's a good idea for obvious reasons, but my husband says we should try and trust him and put the necessary parental blocks on it. I think it's a recipe for disaster. We do have a communal computer for him and his two sisters, where they do school work and they often play games in it. We decided to buy him his own computer so that there wouldn't be a queue for it, as there often would be. I guess I'm asking who was right here, me or dad?
Oh God, don't pull me into that
crikey,
one.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a great idea and I don't think it's a disaster is the honest answer. I don't think it's one of those extremes. I mean, honestly, my personal and professional opinion on this is that ideally bedrooms should be screen-free zones for everyone. Not yeah, just for yeah. teenagers or children, but for everyone. Bedrooms are places to go to relax, unwind, and ultimately go to sleep. And, you know, you don't want to create a situation where a bedroom becomes a self-contained apartment for your child to retreat away from you and the mm-hmm. family and hide there. They've no reason to come out other than for food and water, you know. But I would strongly advise having a designated screen room. So rather than rooms where screens cannot be, have a room where the screens can be, so everyone can access Wi-Fi and their screens. They can, even if it's their own individual screens, they can do so without being isolated from the family while they're engaged in them. So I think that's generally that's the advice I would give, no matter how old the child is. But I do think as well that, you know, your husband has a very good point here, that at 14 years old, it is quite healthy and normal for a teenager to be seeking opportunities for increased privacy, to pull away from family yeah. and friends and want to have their own thing and things that no one else knows but them and time alone. So I would explore other opportunities for privacy for him and increase privacy and time that he can be away from you all. But it doesn't have to be on his screen. You could say to him, look, why is it you want to have it in your bedroom? Is there a particular show or something you want to watch without interruption? Maybe we could get you good earphones to go with your computer or laptop so that you can still do your own thing while in the family room and you won't be disturbed by noise. So look for a compromise. But then, you know, if he's looking for increased privacy and secrecy from parents at 14, don't panic. That's developmentally normal. Please find opportunities for him to have that time.
Yeah. You did very well there, not coming down on one side or the other.
Didn't
there?
I?
Yes,
I am,
excellent work.
Absolutely
yes.
Neutral on this one. Yeah, you're both right.
A new ambassador to the UN. There, we'll take a break. More questions after this.
Parenting on Moncrief, thanks to Five Rivers Fostering, providing 24-hour support for foster parents and children. FiveRiversFostering.ie.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Joanna is still with us. On the subject of the 14-year-old and the computer, Jade suggests maybe put the computer in another room and not around everyone. Is there a study room, perhaps? Once you let them have it in the bedroom, you'll never see them again. Speaking from experience, which was pretty much what Joanna said. Are there any, on the cheeky 5-year-old, are there any siblings and are they as cheeky? She gets it from somewhere. People always say they get it from somewhere, yeah, but do they?
And there's no real basis for that. No. I mean, look, she's at an age as well where she's exploring. I'm the boss of me. No one can tell me what to do. And she's in school and mixing with other kids and she could be picking up all kinds of traits. But also it's an exploration of independence and assertion and I'm who I am. It'd be more an interesting question to go, who does she remind you of, you know, personality wise? Maybe own it that way. But otherwise, this is something some children do more than others, but it's not that they're bad kids. It's that they're learning about boundaries and limit setting.
Yeah. Our son, who is four, soon to be five, has never really been able to settle herself our 4-year-old, soon to be 5-year-old, has never been able to settle herself to sleep. Mum has always been there at bedtime as the child would become upset and vomit if mum left the room. We have another daughter, age 7, who sleeps in the same room as her sister and is a great sleeper. They both have the same calming bedtime routine, stories, etc. But the 4-year-old wakes at different points, nightly demanding mum sleep in her guest bed with her. Having done the putting her back to bed routine several times a night, every night for a few years, mum went back to work last year and began to go with her to the spare bed during the night in order to function. It is taking a toll on the whole family. I think she should be left to cry it out. She's a very bright kid who resists change and tends to be anxious, so not sure if this is the right approach. At the end of our tether.
It's not the right approach. I mean, it's not the right approach for any child to be left to cry it out. You know, I think I again have said that previously, but I'd be strongly opposed to that. Just because children stop crying doesn't mean they're suddenly soothed. It's just they've learned there's no point in crying if they don't get a response. But I do think the fact that you know that she resists change and tends to be anxious in general, you've got to link that to, you know, going to sleep is a prolonged separation for a child from their parents. They have to be in a space on their own, close their eyes, and it's hours and hours before they see you again. And some children just find that really, really difficult. So, I mean, I'm just going to go over a few things that some of which you're probably doing. But sometimes when people say they're at the end of their tether, they might go, yeah, we used to do that. And now we just wing it and do whatever gets us through each night. But obviously have a calm, consistent and predictable routine, set times. And, you know, it's playtime, bath time, pajamas, book, bed, you know, whatever order you want to do that in. No screens at all 1 hour before bed. Make sure you've had your 15 minutes of parent-child play, including an opportunity for a really good belly laugh, particularly with an anxious child, because it just lets go of any residual held feelings in the tummy or whatever. Good, now not tickles, but a good belly laugh.
Well, what's wrong with tickles?
Well, tickles, you know, aren't necessarily relaxing for an anxious child because you're not laughing because it's funny. You're laughing because of that sensory overstimulation.
Okay, all right.
So again, I'm not anti-tickles between parents and children, but it's not the same as a tension-releasing laugh. Ensure that there's enough physical activity in your child's day, including outdoor time, because they really need to get out there in the fresh air, run around and be physically active in order to tire themselves out enough. And then considering a slightly earlier bedtime that it allows you to do more calming routine in it. That might include putting a couple of drops of some kind of aromatherapy oil into a spritzer with water and making it your magic sleep spray, and you spray around her bed and you tell her this is the spray that makes it really nice to sleep. Do a relaxing hand or foot rub, a lot of kind of that deep proprioceptive, you know, deep pressure touch. Ask the two bits about her day. What was the best bit? What bit would she like to change as part of that routine? And end that relaxing routine with saying goodnight to each part of her body and touching each part as you do. So goodnight toes, goodnight foot, goodnight knees, goodnight legs, goodnight hands. And you go up and you give each a nice touch or a kiss as you go through. But really you're bringing her awareness very much out of her head and into her physical body state. You know, it's like a relaxation exercise, but you do it in that goodbye way. And I think that's something that could certainly help her to, it's always cueing her, this is now winding you down. Next thing is that you go to sleep. And if you try a routine like that every single night for certainly 5 to 7 nights in a row, it should see a tangible change for her. Otherwise, get some small world, little Sylvanian families or little dolls, house dolls, and story stem. Play out with those exactly what you want to see from her. Play out a positive bedtime routine, everyone staying in their own beds, and see does that make a difference. But you've got an anxious little worrier who just needs a little bit more of that calming co-regulation. Because at 4 or 5 years old, they don't self-regulate their emotional states. They co-regulate in response to parents and carers. So if you're getting heightened, rattled, oh, here we go, here's the nighttime battle, she'll definitely pick up on that. So everybody just needs a back to basic start over with this. Whatever you've been doing, you may have had moderate success, but it ultimately isn't working. Go back to the beginning and start over as if you've never done a routine before.
Right. Okay. Next question is this. I've been told by her teacher that my daughter, who's 7, may be dyspraxic. It will be some months before she's seen by the health service professionals. Beyond reinforcing daily routines, is there anything we can do in the meantime?
I mean, this is a slightly tricky one. I mean, dyspraxia, just for anyone who doesn't know, is a neurological condition that causes some challenges, varying degrees depending on the diagnosis, around movement and coordination for people. And there are 4 different kinds of dyspraxia. So it's difficult because you haven't had the assessment yet know exactly what you should do. But one of the types of dyspraxia is about difficulty in enunciating words. Another one would be difficulty with a spatial relationship. Another one would be difficulty being able to perform coordinated movement very well. And another one would focus on a problem, even following single step tasks. So without knowing what kind of dyspraxic symptoms your daughter is showing, unfortunately, you're absolutely right, it is months and months to get an assessment. But there are things you could do. So I suppose, broadly speaking, when we talk about sequence coordination, I think if you talk about your day and her day, that increases her narrative skills and her ability to go, this happened, then this, and then this, and then this. And that's a helpful thing to do. Break any actions that are required from her down into individual steps. Here's what we're doing. First thing is A, B, C. That's it. Mm. And then when you get to C, you recap, okay, we've done that. Next comes D, E, F. And even if 3 steps are too much, start with 1 step or 2 steps, but break it down into those pieces for and with her. That's going to be helpful. Rehearse any order routines with her. So that would be order routines, or anything like getting dressed, having breakfast, getting from the breakfast table to get your school bag, to get to the car, anything, you know, that has an order, rehearse that with her so that she's very, very clear. And something I find useful is to actually draw that out into a storyboard that has maybe 6 steps in it, so that she has a visual aid to go, this is what I have to do. Okay, I've done those 2 things. Now I know what comes next. Writing a list of things on a blackboard, daily routine or what's happening after school or whatever it might be, is helpful. And if there's, I mean, she's a bit young for it, but in general, as they get older, it can be helpful for dyspraxic people to have some organizational support around labeling folders and boxes. This is where all the Legos go. This is where, so that they have that order put in front of them. So while no 2 kids with dyspraxia are the same, no 2 people really with dyspraxia are the same, maybe your health center, where you're on a waiting list, could link you with another parent of a dyspraxic child who could give you some support parent to parent, and maybe give you some increased insight as well about the condition while you're waiting. So it might be worth linking in with somebody to do that.
Then again, at the same time, she's been told by the teacher that the daughter may be dyspraxic.
And may not be.
Might it be something else?
Absolutely, it might be something else. And a teacher would be in a privileged position to have seen it before, to recognise some symptoms. But in no way is that teacher making a diagnosis, nor are they able to. So you're waiting on an occupational therapy assessment. So all you can do is wait. Pay attention to the type of symptoms that's triggered this, maybe. And the things that I've listed out there, to be honest, can be really good for kids who just need a bit more structure in their day. Even if they're not dyspraxic, may benefit from increased structure. Those kinds of steps are certainly not going to do any harm while you're waiting. But don't rush into any books or reading or things like that until you know what you're dealing with.
Joanna, thanks a million for coming into us. Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. Spies of No Country.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by 123.ie. Don't make insurance a hot topic. Just go to 123.ie, where simple is smarter.